Hello and welcome to Shades and Layers. I'm your host, Kutlwano Skosana Richie. My guest today is Johannesburg-based hair care entrepreneur Amanda Sibulai. Her brand, Dignify Afro Beauty, has been growing in leaps and bounds over the past 5 years and having an impact beyond providing products that go on your hair. Amanda tells us about her vision for this brand and how she thinks it can contribute to the growing self-love movement in post-apartheid South Africa. She shares her own hair journey, how she launched and grew out her product line, and the path to being available online and slowly expanding to local retailer stores. Our conversation is both instructive and informative, and as always, we keep things candid. So without further ado, let's get into the story of Dignify Afro Beauty and its founder, Amanda Sibulai. Let's start with what it is that you do as a company, what you do in the company, and what it means to you on a deeper level.
Wow, Dignify Afro Beauty has become literally my fourth child. I have three children, and it is so dear to me. So what we do, in, you know, really, it's in the name, right? We dignify African beauty. And and I think for us, for a very long time, have really never took a stand on defining our own beauty and not let the Western environment to define our beauty. We have definitely focused on the Afro beauty, which is really the natural hair piece, which we completely believe is the essence of our identity. So as Dignify Afro Beauty, we dignify natural hair beauty, and we believe that that translates into overall self-love. What I do in the business, I'm the founder of Dignify Afro Beauty. I always say together with my two daughters, because everything we've done to start this off has been together with them, and all the recipes we've tried have tried on my hair and on their hair.
Oh, nice.
They've even inspired some of the products themselves. So yeah, no, really, that's what I do, and that's what Dignify Afro Beauty is about.
Okay, let's talk about your products. So what do you offer out there for all these naturalistas?
So we literally right now have about, I'll call 10 products in the market, and we offer this one product called a pre-wash. In America, they call it a pre-poo. We've called it a pre-wash. And this is really amazing because it's got a garlic, it's got an onion that really helps with antifungal properties. It helps address the bacteria that causes dandruff. And it's really awesome during, let's say you've had braids for a very long time, you're undoing it.
Right.
Put this on. As you undo, it will completely detangle your hair. It will, you know, cleanse your hair, literally deal with that bacteria. By the time you wash your hair or go to a hair salon, your hair is completely moist, detangled, and easy to look after. We also have a shampoo, and we've got two types of shampoo. So we've got this shampoo, but also a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. And this is really awesome for your wash day. Also is great for, let's say you have your long-term protective style. You can use this while you've got your braids on, when you've got your twists, when you've got your cornrows.
So that's the combo, the washer, conditioner.
Washer and conditioner. So that's really awesome. And then we have two types of conditioners. So one is your normal hair conditioner that you would use as part of just your wash day. We also have a deep mask, which is really your hair treatment to keep your hair healthy. We also then have a leave-in conditioner. So after you've washed and you've treated, it moisturizes our hair naturally, but also you can use it with wet hair or dry hair. It also revitalizes your curls. One of the biggest issues I think that we battled with when we thought about Dignify Afro Beauty was...
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, was really to moisturize our hair. We just found that whatever product we used, it was very difficult to keep your hair moisturized longer than the day you applied the product. And the inspiration of starting Dignify Afro Beauty started actually when I turned 40. And I decided to cut my hair short. And that was because my girls had actually grown up with their hair either relaxed or in braids and had never seen me in particular with short hair like yourself, you know?
Right.
And so I was like, I need my girls to know that you look beautiful irrespective of what type of hair you have. That was really it. It was not, I want to start a natural hair company, you know. And then I wore my hair naturally for, you know, 2 to 3, 4 years. then I decided, okay, I want to grow this hair. And as I journeyed to figure out how do you grow natural hair, I realized it was a very difficult journey. At the time, we didn't have any of these American products in South Africa. Literally had to find this out myself. I navigated the space. It was extremely painful until I got to the point I was like, okay, let me just start cooking some stuff in my house. And as I started really making your avocado oils, your carrot oil, I mean, I think my family was like, there goes our grocery bill, right? And, olive oil, always you can imagine how expensive account. Olive oil is. So we literally did. I mean, it got to the point where my helper knew when she makes rice, she has to put rice water on the side for me. I'd find rice water in the kitchen, And I think the reason I decided to go that route was because I had tried whatever I could find in the market at the time, and nothing was working. And if it was working, it was for a day, and then the next day it's a different, different scenario. I even had American friends at the time that I also engaged. I'm like, guys, what are you using? They told me what products they were using. I shipped some of those products here. They did not work, And so I realized that there's something really different about our hair, and no one has actually thought about how to help our hair stay moisturized. And literally, even today, when people find my products with all these American products in South Africa, they always say, where have you been all my life?
Oh, that's so cool.
Honestly. And yeah, and I mean, one of our best products that we moisturize with is this shine lotion. It is such a very simple product that you put on your hair every day, every morning, your hair in the morning. It keeps your hair nice and shiny, but also moisturized. It works for boys, works for girls, works for teens, works for men and women. The second thing we realized was to also stop breakage. Our hair breaks a lot. Not only because it's prone to breaking, but also we don't know the hair care routine of how to gently look after our hair. So these products, they stop breakage, and people are really blown away by that. But then we also teach how to then look after your hair. Fingers are your best comb, and just how gentle one needs to be. Because I think we grew up thinking our hair is tough. I can handle anything. Actually, our hair is the most brittle. So,
actually, let's get into that, because I'm wondering about your hair journey, right? You have this part which led to Dignify Afro Beauty.
Yeah.
But before that, right, you had this period where you are relaxing, braiding. And I remember that was a requirement in high school. but before that, growing up, before entering into these multiracial or majority white spaces, what was your experience with your own natural hair?
True. Actually, I remember being in growing up in lower primary. We had my cousin. She was the only one. She was older than me. She was the only one who knew how to plait our hair. And so literally on Sundays, she would be the one plaiting our hair as natural as could be. And I just remember how tight she would make my plaits. I think she hated plaiting our hair. You wouldn't be able to smile for days.
I can't sleep
well. Yeah, I remember. Number one. Number two, I remember us using, that iron comb that you put on the stove, to straighten our hair.
Soak
I remember.
Press.
Yes, I remember that. That's what it was. It was Vaseline. It was glycerine that we used on our hair. And I never had to think about literally relaxing my hair. I think when I started relaxing my hair, I was about 16, which was the time I was actually at the multiracial school. But most of the times, and also braiding was not allowed while I was in junior school, because it was a luxury. It was expensive to put hair pieces on your hair.
Yeah.
But only when I was in high school, those things started being introduced in my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there is a lost tradition there,
right? Because
hair care is a community ritual.
And that's where we find
ourselves in our own bathrooms trying to play, formulators, etc.
I know. One of the things I really want to do is to investigate those old ways of how we looked after our hair. Because one of the things you see now, a lot of us as Black women, especially in South Africa, are battling with alopecia, are battling with thinning hair. And it is sometimes related to how we've looked after our hair with the different hair pieces, different wigs. But I really want to know how they got their hair beautiful. Big afros, remember? Mm-hmm. And for me, that's the healthy hair.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You say you worked with your daughters on this. So tell me about how you eventually started actually selling to people, to the public.
Yeah. So I tried these on the stove products on my hair and for first year. And I was like, I was blown away. I was blown away by how my hair responded and how moisturized it felt and how it started growing. The second year, I said to my girls, listen, can I please try these on you? Because I might be crazy. I might be thinking these things work, but they actually don't work for other people. Can I try these on you? And literally for that second year, there was, you know, willing, and we tried and we realized how different our three hair types were and how the different products worked on this one and didn't work on that one. And my girls, one of them is very much interested, you know, she would make her own products herself. Like, oh, don't worry, I don't need your pre-wash. I've made my own, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, right? And so all the mayonnaise and the eggs and everything. Anyway, so.
Right.
So then after I realized it works on them as well, I thought to myself, wait a minute, this needs to be professionalized, right? And so I looked for a manufacturer that was willing, would be willing to take my recipes and manufacture these products for me. I found a manufacturer that was willing to literally take in some of my ingredients, even test them and create these amazing products. So this Hair Shine Lotion was our first one. And one of the things it has in here, which was my requirement, I said, I need some amazing herb that you only get in India included. And I literally brought it to the manufacturer. They created this whole product for me. Even today, I'm always testing new products, but I start at home. I start at home, I test and I see, and then I'm able to send the recipes to them to say, this is what I want in this product. I'll put it in. So that's how it happened. And then we were able to sell. And this product was quite interesting because it was my first one. So the minute I started selling, I think where I realized there was value was when people wanted to buy it again. Right. When I started having repeat purchases, this of all of our products, this is the one that I think we replenish 3 to 4 times a year because it just goes. And we're very grateful for that and very grateful for our repeat clients that provide such great reviews on the use of our products. So we're very grateful for that.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Shades and Layers, and my guest today is founder of the South African hair care brand Dignify Afro Beauty, Amanda Sibulai. Up next, we get into the practicalities of how to run a hair care brand, her company's milestones so far, as well as how she balances her full-time job with the demands of running a small business.
Before we get into the sales side of things, let's start with the sourcing of your ingredients. How does that work for you? What are some of the challenges that you come across or advantages being a small batch producer?
Yeah, it is not easy. Hey, so the good thing is that so when I'm at home, I don't need obviously large amounts of testing the ingredients at first. So I use very small volumes in terms of those individual ingredients. We do have amazing companies here that sell natural, either dried leaves or dried spices that I'm able to purchase from. One of the things futuristically that I've realized was that actually I would love to own the whole value chain and actually start planting my own ingredients. So things like your avocados, things like my herbs that I use, the spices that we use. I'd love to be able to have a farm, you know, so that I'm able to own that whole value chain. But for now, I source them locally, and there is one that I really can, you can only find in India. One of the things that we've engaged with our agriculture department or minister is to say, what are the processes of bringing some of these plants that we can farm them in South Africa? So it's futuristically, those are some of the things I'd love to be able to do. But for now, I source locally.
Okay, that's great. How do you find these collaborators? Because it's quite a step from formulating in your kitchen to formalizing the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was really knocking on doors. Hey, you knock and you knock and you knock and you like, listen, I have this. And you know, you can imagine, like, female, young, who are you? What are you looking for? We can't help you, you know? And that's what you receive, a lot of just no's and no's and no's, you know, to the point when I found this particular individual. And remember, at the time, you don't even have high amounts of capital to really invest in this whole thing. I can't buy a whole ton of a product, you know, and I need a manufacturer that will understand my financial standing. And that I'm really looking to grow slowly and but surely. And it was very difficult, I'm not going to lie. And I feel it was very challenging for any Black females, I suppose, all SMMEs and entrepreneurs to just enter this market and be able to find people that will believe in your dream and be able to support you in implementing your dream to the next level. But to be honest, I did pray a lot. I did fast a lot for this business, and I still do. I meditate a lot because I need some guidance. I need direction. Throughout all the stages of the business, I feel like I've been quite, I don't know if I want to call it lucky, but I really appreciate the responses and the answers that God has given me through this journey. Yeah,
luck plays a role. But how did you raise the capital?
Honestly, from my pocket, right? It was really, because, you know, it's not a business that you just jump out of your corporate job and be like, this is what I'm going to do full time. When you've got a bond to pay and children to take to private school, you know, so your costs are revenues. Yeah. There is nowhere, you know. So continued work full time from a corporate perspective. And then whatever additional extra income I could, I invested in my business and I continue to do that. Now the business is starting to literally almost sustain itself. It's not there yet, but it's really awesome to see the progress and the growth that the business is achieving. So that's how I raised the capital. And I have looked for funding here and there. And quite a lot of the funding for SMMEs, I find you see a lot of companies are willing and able, but when you think about it, it's another loan, right? And there's interest. They might say, no, you don't have to pay it in the first year, but let me tell you, it's an interest. I'm like, look, I'm not ready to get into debt to run a business. So we're at the point now where we just like, listen, we're going to run it as fast as our income allows us, but we are not going to break the bank, nor are we going to get ourselves into debt.
Okay, so slow productivity is the philosophy. So what are the big milestones for you so far?
Wow. So big milestones for us, definitely the product range, because after we had the first product out, we realized that we couldn't really launch big without having a whole range. I only sold to people that I knew at the time, but being able to have the whole range of looking after your hair has been really amazing. So the fact that you could literally, it would be before you wash, while you wash, treat your hair, and then on-go daily hair care. So that was a great milestone for us. The second milestone has definitely been being able to get your basics in place, right? Your website with e-commerce enabled, you know, getting sales on the website, you know, credit card payments. That was really a huge milestone for us. And then thirdly, being able to just get onto social media and understand how social media works. It's something that we're still learning, but the fact that we're on social media and people know us, people are like, oh, I think I've seen you. I think I've seen, you know, so that's really exciting. And then fourthly, just being on Takealot. It was
So you're distributing there. Nice.
I am distributing through Takealot. And just the process of getting onto Takealot it was overwhelming, you know, the technical skills that are required to just enable your product through that platform and being able to create operational processes to make sure you meet their deadline. Because the minute you get the order, you have to make sure it arrives at Takealot within a certain time. And if you miss that SLA, you get kicked out. So being able to create those processes in the background has been really amazing. So those are great milestones for us. What we're looking forward to is definitely being on the retail space.
Okay. So that's where you're going.
Yeah. We've looked at everything and knocked on quite a few of these doors, your clicks, your discams. And what we've realized, and with the support and the advice of one of the big banks in South Africa, IDCF, the big funder, was, look, I think rather than going straight into retail right now, rather slow down, rather focus on just growing your market as best as you can. As the minute you get into retail, then you've got other targets to achieve. You must make sure that your product gets sold. If it doesn't get sold, you must buy it back from the retailer. So if you know, so where we are now is just we actually are okay not being on the retail. You know, we are doing smaller retailers. We are in smaller retailers. We've got two hair salons that use our products. We've got one small pharmacy not far from where we stay. We literally got an email a week ago from a retailer that actually said, hey, people are coming to our retailer asking for your products. Can you come in?
Oh, that's interesting. You know,
so that's really encouraging. No, I mean, we think that the right time will come for us to be able to pivot.
To distribute countrywide.
But, you know, you say we. Is it still your daughters or do you have other members of the team?
It's, for me, it's still my daughters. Even, you know, still my daughters.
I mean, good for them.
Yeah. No. So they guide me, they help me. And then I've got an administrator, a client service administrator that works to help with basic things like making sure we've got the containers, making sure we've got orders. We do a lot of markets as well, make sure we prepare for the markets. And just basic administration type of work. So I've got someone that I hire that does that.
Tell me about the hiring process, because your first hire is super important.
I'm on my third.
You're on your third.
On the
oh
same
my gosh.
Job.
Oh gosh.
Oh my goodness. I can't, guys. You know, so, I mean, you can imagine that I work full time, you know, so I need, when I hire them, I say, you're here to run my business full time. And run it like it's your business. And sometimes you get good ones. Sometimes you get really bad ones with such bad attitudes, you know. So, I think it's a very sad situation that we're in. Honestly, I think that basic work ethic, it's not about the complex job. It's just a basic work ethic. Your work starts at 8, arrive at 8. Your boss told you to do X, do X. Don't do X minus 1. Like, I don't understand that. And it's a basic task. So, I am
Everyone complains about that.
I am losing my mind. And it's very sad, honestly, because where do these youngsters, where are they going to get hired?
Oh, young people. I'm sorry. I mean, I was once a young person running a business. So I'm just like, I'm very wary of criticizing. But everybody complains about the same thing.
What are we going to do? And these are our children. Like, in fairness, these are our children.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking to myself, what can we do?
This is Shades and Layers, and we're coming up to the final part of our conversation with Amanda Sibulai. Let's now talk big picture and get into the Shades and Layers rapid fire. So what role do you think Dignify Afro Beauty plays in the South African beauty landscape?
I really think, we play bigger than the beauty landscape, right? And and for us, we believe that our whole vision and mission is to make sure that people start loving themselves. And if you think about hair and the history of South Africa, our hair was used against us. You know, there was a time during the apartheid regime at the time, they used the pencil test on our hair to determine if you were black. And if that pencil didn't fall off your hair, you were black. You know, and being black was, you can imagine, deemed to be a very negative identity. And our goal is to eradicate that trauma that was placed upon us. And we believe that by just letting people teach and learn and let them love their hair the way it is, that translates in them loving themselves and who they are and how beautiful they are and how black and beautiful they are. So for us, it's not really about beauty. It's more than just really being able to drive that self-love back into our society and just let people know you are beautiful the way you are and no one should define that for you.
I mean, it sounds like you're running a busy operation. How do you keep that center and focus when the busyness of running a business takes over?
Yeah. You know, one of the things and a lot of people ask me that because I do quite a lot within this 24 hours that we have in a day. But one thing that I've learned is to compartmentalize my time. So I know between this time and this time, I'm doing my corporate job. Between this time and this time, I do my business. And my Saturdays, my weekends are my weekends for me to do things like my business. So, and that's why I hire someone during the week that they manage the customer service piece. I've got a contractor that looks after the development of the website. And then also, you know, with all these AI tools, as well as the automation of social media, it just makes it a lot easier because then I can dedicate a weekend to literally think about the social media strategy and design the content. And then it gets posted automatically on the system on the days that I want it to be posted.
So there's also the regulatory side of things. You have to make sure your products are safe. You have to get them tested. What are some of the adjustments you've had to make or any challenges that have come your way in that process?
We've actually been quite privileged to be part of the Consumer Goods Council. And within the Consumer Goods Council, they have Entrepreneur Supplier Development Arm. And so we've been part of that. And they've really been amazing at educating and teaching us around product development and management and making sure that we are compliant. So through that process, we've been able to get our products officially tested, get a testing results and test certificates. So that's really been amazing.
Right.
And also being able to get barcodes, which is really critical and important. Labeling of your products. You can't get into retail without a barcode. So, and even within the barcode space, there's elements of compliance that you need to adhere to. So we've been really exposed to the whole value chain, as well as the compliance requirements of each of these products. This, the next level in terms of all of that process is understanding the compliance of shipping internationally. And that's what we're starting to figure out. We've had literally clients asking us, please, can I have your product? And the minute we have to ship overseas is a whole nother requirement that we need to adhere to. So that's something that we're working on now.
I don't even ask friends anymore. It's just like, okay, it's way too expensive.
But it's great to have Amazon here, so we're excited about it.
Yeah, so, okay, has that helped in any way?
Well, that's my project for December.
You're going to be busy then.
I'm looking forward to unpack that.
Okay, that's great. I look forward to seeing your product on this side. That'll be great.
Yay.
So what do you think has been the most fulfilling part of your entrepreneurial journey so far?
Wow. I think till today, the most fulfilling for me are comments and pictures I get from our clients. I just want to cry. When a client's, you know, so one of the clients that I have, I worked with her at the current job. And she's like, Amanda, I heard that you've got natural hair products. My child's hair, I'm about to relax it. I don't know what to do with it. I said to her, wait, just try these products. So I gave her literally, I think, a shine lotion and most probably an oil. She tried these products within a week. She's like, Amanda, what is this? I mean, she's been using it, I think, now for 6 months. And this week, still, she sends me a picture. Amanda, look at your daughter's hair. Look at my, you know, and the child loves her afro. The child loves her hair. For me, that's the most fulfilling. When these young children love their hair the way it is. I have a little salon chair that every so often I get a chance to play around with these young children's hair. And we speak. We speak about how beautiful their hair is and how it shrinks and why shrinkage is so important and how they can do anything with it. It's the only type of hair that can transform and look like any other type of hair, right? So you can take it from a kink to a curly to a straight. The other hair type can never be a kink. They can never revert to our state, yet we can revert to all the other states. How beautiful is that? You know,
it's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. And having those conversations for me has been the most fulfilling experience.
Oh, that's great. That's really, really great. So you basically want to create a legacy company, or would you be interested if L'Oreal came to you and offered you a buyout?
You know, we've had this discussion with my husband a lot. You know, he's like, no, I mean, consider it. And, you know, I think for me, I'll be very conflicted. I'm not going to lie. I'll be absolutely conflicted because I think for me, I don't know if you can translate my passion and the vision of this business to someone else. Unless, of course, they're willing to buy, but I can still run the brand and continue driving what it stands for. So not L'Oreal, but I find these company aggregators.
Yeah, sure.
So do you get any kind of support from other women who are working with brands in this space? What's your mentorship and education looking like in here?
Yeah, it is not easy because obviously you can imagine that we are competing against each other. So there's no one who's going to be sitting around guiding and advising you. So I found great mentorship in the Consumer Goods Council. I'm on audiobooks quite a lot because, you know, time to sit and read is actually very limited. So when I'm in my car, when I'm, you know, doing my morning meditation, I have opportunities to listen to audio. So I'm going through that, learning how to do that. My husband is an entrepreneur and he's been running his business for 24 years. So he's provides me quite good guidance in terms of what to do and what not to do. So if there's any other ideas that you have there of who could mentor me, I would be open to it.
So now we've come to the part where we get to know you a little bit more, and it's the Shades and Layers rapid fire. So first question is, what would you call your memoir and why?
I would call it She Came and Left with Impact.
Okay. And why is that?
I think for me, you know, when I turned 40, I looked at my life, I looked back and I thought, yo, I spent the first 40 years all about me. And which was right? Because then I had to focus on my education, my job, my, you know.
Exactly.
And
that's what you do when you're young.
Exactly. You know, but I look back and I thought, no, the next 40 years, how could I spend just all being about me? What am I giving back? What am I giving back to the world? And and I feel like, you know, I really want to do that. I want to be able to provide an impact. I want to change someone's life, even if it's just a little bit of it or a little aspect. So for me, I want to make an impact, and I would call it that.
Okay.
Nice. Because the impact I make for me, it was not only in the hair business. I also started in a nonprofit after I turned 40, and that focuses on just being able to give back, you know, to my hometown, Soweto.
Right. What nonprofit?
It's called First Things First, and we provide extra lessons and tutoring and Saturday schools to a township school or high school and remedial English lessons. Yeah, we've been running it now since 2016, and it's been also quite fulfilling.
Oh, Amanda, you're so inspiring.
This is so great.
Thank you.
And you look so happy.
I am.
So nice to see you, you know?
I'm so grateful.
That's great. That is so great. It's lovely. I love it.
Thanks.
So if you had to turn your life story into a movie, who would play the lead actress?
Interestingly, I think, you know, I think I couldn't think of anyone else but my two daughters, to be honest.
Are they your mini-me twins?
The thing is, they know me, but they know different sides of me, you know.
Right.
The one will act their firm, you know, strict, you know, because she's actually like that. And then the other one will act the soft, you know, giving to everyone, never getting anything back. You know, miserable and sad and cries all the time for little things, you know. And I can see myself in both of them. It's so interesting each one of them have taken different aspects of me. I think they would really act me the best way. But you'd have to use both of them because.
Okay, great. That's nice. And then finally, which famous Black woman, living or dead, would you invite to dinner? And why?
This is going to sound very different, and I can't say famous, but the one Black woman I'd love to invite for dinner, dead or alive, would be my mother's mom.
Okay.
I never met her, and she left my mom or died when my mom was 12. And the things that she taught my mom those first 12 years have had a multi-generational impact, you know, and I don't know, you know, because I've personally benefited from her. I would love to meet her. I'd love to have her for dinner.
Right.
I'd love to understand how did she know what she's known. And one of the biggest lessons that have helped us as a family on the back of this Black woman that I've never met has been just having a positive mindset and being able to be a visionary. And my mom has been able to be that, and that's how she's lived her life, but also to be able to know what she liked and what she didn't like. Because of her mom, I'll give you one example. Her mom stayed in her marriage that was abusive because of her children. But through that process, my mom learned that if she ever found herself in that situation, she would leave the marriage for the sake of her children. So that was one aspect. The second aspect was really around being clear around what you want. My mom, when the schools in 1986 fell apart in the townships, she, in her mind, it was crazy. In her mind, and it didn't work to take me to the rural areas. Didn't work. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get that. Couldn't fetch the water from the river. I'm sorry. Anyway, so she literally said to herself, "I want the best." That's all she said to herself. "I want the best school for my kids."
Yeah.
And she was a nurse, didn't earn much, and single mom of two children.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up at the school that I was at. You know. And of all the schools, you know, that she took me, I had to write these entry exams. And apparently I didn't do well in any of them except for the one that I went to, which was the most expensive of all of them.
Exactly. You know?
It was just like,
she worked that lady.
Exactly. So I mean, I just think that, you know, she taught her such amazing lessons around being firm, around mindset, around fighting for what is right. For instance, my mom chose education above marriage when, you know, at that age, because those were her choices. She was like, no, I want to study. I want to finish my matric. And you can imagine where our lives would be. I don't know if it would be born, but anyway, you know, but where our lives would be had she made different decisions. So I'd love to just spend some time with her and understand who she was and thank her for the multi-generational impact that she's had in our lives.
That's great. So if people want to work with you, invest in your business, buy some products, where can they find you?
We're on at Dignify Afro Beauty on our social media. So they can DM, they can phone, they can email Amanda at dignifyafrobeauty.co.za. We are completely open doors, willing to work with anyone who can transform not only our business, but the vision that we have for our country and our women and men.
And that is all from me today. Thank you, Amanda, for sharing your story. And of course, I appreciate that you've listened to this episode. If you like it, please share with a friend or someone who would find it useful and inspirational. I'm Kutlwano Skhosana Richie, and until next time, please do take good care.